Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The State House voted this week to make it harder for people living near hog farm operations to sue the companies for damage to their property from the liquefied swine waste sprayed by the farms. The bill passed despite objections from prominent Republicans and Democrats. Joining us now to talk about it and to weigh in on the massive cuts proposed for the EPA is Representative Pricey Harrison from Guilford County. Thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
I guess I want to start with a bill that's been in the news quite a bit that you were not happy about, which is the, I guess for a lack of a better word, the hog farm nuisance bill. Tell us what that actually does.
Basically what it does is it limits damages and lawsuits by neighbors of hog farms. And it was directly aimed at pending litigation against Smithfield, Chinese-owned Smithfield Foods. And I think there are over 500 plaintiffs who had signed on. And the reason why this is really particularly detrimental to plaintiffs' claims is because you're limited in the amount of damages you could recover. And that would, it's a disincentive for lawyers to be able to represent some of these really low-income properties. And it was unconstitutional. It was pretty shameful. And it was particularly ironic that it came during the week that the Cape Fear and the Neuse River declared the two most endangered rivers in our country, largely due to hog pollution.
For people who are listening, that I found it fascinating that a lot of the folks who voted for it all claimed to be for property rights, and this was actually affecting the value of people's property.
Right, and that's why we had Skip Stan, who was a property rights guru and scholar, weigh in against the bill, and Justice Orr, Robert Orr, who was a Supreme Court justice for a while. Yes, it was definitely a property rights issue, and it was confounding the folks who supported it. But there's also a nice corollary with the campaign money that went into those folks who voted for the bill.
And what about the governor on this one?
I assume he's not happy with it. I mean, the bill was made better by the fact that it didn't interfere with pending lawsuits. So I think that there's some who felt some relief there, but still it's a bad bill going forward, so I'm hoping he'll veto it.
Let's talk about where we are. I have to ask you every time about coal ash, coal energy. What's happening?
I just filed a bunch of bills on it the past 2 days, one of which insists that the ratepayers do not pick up the tab for cleaning up the coal ash problem and limiting where that coal ash can be moved to, because that's been a big problem with folks who are near the Chatham mine sites where they've been used for reclamation for the coal ash. And I believe a court this week ruled that that could not happen without in the unlined areas. And that's a real problem, because if you don't have any way to capture the toxins, they just leach into the groundwater, which is the problem with where the coal ash is now. So I think we've had a court victory on that. We've had some legislation proposed. I don't know if it'll move, but I do believe in my research that there isn't a large amount of cost that Duke couldn't actually absorb themselves without increasing ratepayers' bills to clean it up.
What about that we haven't talked to you in a while, but Duke's idea to compensate people for their drinking water? What do you make of that?
Well, I guess it's goodwill generating efforts, but I don't see how that adequately compensates the neighbors of those coal ash ponds. I keep seeing pictures on Twitter and on Facebook of families who have been drinking out of bottled water for years, and a $5,000 compensation isn't going to do much to undo all that inconvenience and potential public health hazard. And, you know, we still have this issue about the hexavalent chromium and whether it's actually a carcinogen. Well, it is a carcinogen, but whether it's naturally occurring or associated with coal ash. So there are lots of questions up in the air. I'm glad we have a new DEQ secretary that can adequately deal with this, because we have a new direction there now.
I was going to ask you about the ultimate solution is to stop using coal to produce energy at some point. So there's a lot of discussion, as always, about renewable energies. There's controversy about wind farms in the northeastern part of the state, and a proposal to have a moratorium on wind farms. Where do you think we are in terms of renewables?
Well, right. Well, so to answer the first part of the question, I think that utilities have signaled that coal is on its way out, that they're not going to be building more coal-fired power plants and not creating new coal jobs. And the focus has been on renewable energy and natural gas. So, yes, you're right. There have been a number of attacks on renewable energy. It seems to be the third rail of a particular part of the Republican caucus. And there a number of bills have been filed. But there's a nice coalition of moderate Republicans who understand the economics of renewable energy and the fact that we actually face a carbon-constrained future. We can't continue to pursue fossil fuels. And it's been a really wonderful boost to our state's economy. So wind and solar, and we're number two in installed solar in the country, and thousands of solar and wind jobs in our state and energy efficiency jobs. And that's the way we should be going. But there's going to continue to be this element that does not like renewable energy and will continue to file bills. But I don't see them moving. We defeated that wind bill this week, and I think Representative Dixon has a solar study bill that he's continuing to push that it is not particularly pro-solar. But I think the economics of it are bearing out that this is the direction we should be going.
You mentioned the new DEQ Secretary, Michael Regan. How important is that as we have these debates?
Well, we had a DEQ Secretary who thought that oil was a renewable resource and was a climate skeptic and thought that the customers of DEQ were actually the polluters who were seeking permits rather than the North Carolinians who are breathing the air and drinking the water. So we've got a paradigm shift there for sure, which is a nice switch. And we have a staff now at DEQ that doesn't feel demoralized. It feels like they actually can do their job of protecting public health and the state's natural resources. So that's very important, because if you have staff that isn't interested in doing its job of protecting those resources, then you really can't do much without their help and cooperation.
And how much of now what happens is giving the department the resources that it needs to protect the environment, which is those jobs were dramatically reduced in the last few years?
They were. And I do believe that there's a continued effort to cut more jobs out of DEQ. And I hope that doesn't get any traction with the budget writers. But we're off significantly from 2005-06 levels. And it's not good. It's not necessarily good for those who are seeking permits, because you don't have the staff in place. They can't issue them, and eventually the program's going to get sent to the EPA administrator in Atlanta, which is not convenient for anybody.
I want to ask you about a couple quick non-environmental things. One is Representative Lambeth has a bill which he doesn't want to call it Medicaid expansion, but it does provide health care for more people under Medicaid than a previous law, which this feels like a philosophical departure from what we've heard from Republican leaders for a while.
I don't see how you argue against it. I mean, you've had Republican governors in Republican states, and I believe Kansas, enact Medicaid expansion. We've got, as you know, 500,000 North Carolinians who are going uninsured. We are losing, we had 2,000 to 3,000 people die a year in North Carolina because of lack of preventative health care that could be covered by Medicaid expansion. And there are just thousands and thousands of jobs that could be created and billions of dollars in our state's economy. So it's hard to argue against it. And I'm glad they put this program forward. It's based on Indiana's program. I'm not too keen on the requirement that premiums be paid and that these individuals be required to be working or seeking work, because I've met constituents who are in really bad shape who need access to health care, and they aren't in any position to work. That's why they are unemployed and need access to health care. So I'm not super keen on the parameters of it, but I think that it's a really good start. Unfortunately, the speaker's indicated he's not particularly interested in it, so it may not move.
And then in the wake of the HB2 controversy and the, I don't know what to call it, partial repeal or however you want to characterize it, now we have four of your colleagues introducing legislation to disobey the Supreme Court and try to invalidate same-sex marriage.
Right. And that's crazy. I think that same set of sponsors has sponsored constitutional right to carry. I mean, I think they've got a particular sort of states' rights attitude about what we should be doing in the legislature. I think it sends a wrong signal. I think it's unfortunate they even introduced the bill, but clearly it's not going to go anywhere, but it just doesn't look good for our state.
I heard Governor Cooper speak a week or two after the HB2 partial repeal, I don't know what to call it, and he did say that he was still committed to having statewide non-discrimination protection. So how important is that, and is there still an effort to do that?
It's super important, because you can be fired for being gay. You can be denied housing for being gay. And, I mean, we need to fix that. Other states have these protections. I've filed legislation to provide statewide non-discrimination protections. And, I mean, you can't even be protected from veteran status. You can be denied housing because of veteran status. That's something we ought to fix. And I thought it was unfortunate that the House Bill 2 fix had this four-year prescription on any local non-discrimination ordinances, because I don't think our state's going to be doing it anytime soon, and the cities that are interested in doing it ought to be allowed to.
Well, let's hope that they are at some point. Thanks for all you're doing, and we appreciate you being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Up next, a national environmental leader on why it's more important than ever to stand up for the environment. Stay tuned.